So let's say you see a house burning and there's a cat inside, just inside the front door. You know, it's not up on the second floor or anything. It's just inside the front door. It's looking out and sort of frozen there, not sure what to do. And you are really afraid of fire. I mean, you are terrified of flames and you hate being hot. But there's this little kitty cat inside. You see it. You want to save it. So you run to the front door. You grab the cat and then you book it. Well, you, my friend, were brave. Very brave. Hi, I'm Jennifer Guerra. Today's show is all about being brave. Now, sure, not every act of bravery has to have some big burning house and a big rescue. Courage takes all kinds of forms. It's different for everyone. For some, it might be crossing the street by yourself. Others, it might be skiing down a large mountain or
stepping out of your comfort zone.
Not hiding behind everything.
Doing what you fear the most.
Overcoming what your voices in your head are telling you and going for it.
We'll hear four stories today. Some you'll hear and you'll think, well, yeah, that's obviously courageous. Others are going to be a little more subtle. Our first story is about a man named Paul, a pool, and one big, bad dream. Here to tell it are reporters Megan Berry, Henry Brown, and Annette Wang.
In the summer of 1996, Paul Fauber attended a summer camp for boys. He was 14 years old. He participated in all kinds of camp activities like hiking, canoeing, running, swimming. The only thing that he couldn't do was dive. He had never learned, but he wanted to that summer.
However, before he got a chance, his friend made a prophecy.
I've been talking about the fact that I was going to learn to dive that week. And he kind of told me we were sitting at the mess hall table at the cafeteria. And he was like, hey, you know, I had a dream last night that you tried to learn how to dive and you died. And we buried you on the baseball diamond. Past the mashed potatoes.
While his friend probably never spared a second thought about his dream,
Paul couldn't stop thinking about it.
It scared me. And I bet he forgot it the next day. But I obviously, you know, remembered it and thought about it a lot.
So for 10 years, Paul never dived. He always had an excuse. Something like, the pool is green, or it's October.
Say, oh, it's a Tuesday. You know, I would never learn how to dive on a Tuesday.
Even though Paul didn't dive, he would still swim. He was even on his swim team at camp.
But the craziest thing was that I looked so silly jumping in the pool when everyone else was doing these graceful swan dives. And I would kind of flail like, ah, and make a big splash. And I would always have to make up for it.
So right off the bat, Paul would be in last place, which meant he had to make up for a lot of lost time.
I was more willing to lose or go slower than just meet one of my fears and conquer it.
One day in the summer of 2006, Paul was talking to his friend Tasha. She told Paul that she was afraid of putting her head underwater.
I don't want to go into water. Get away from me. I don't want to put my head underwater.
Paul told Tasha that he was afraid to dive.
I don't want to dive. I don't like diving. I'm afraid.
So they made a deal.
They would go to their friend Liz's pool. Paul would learn to dive and Tasha would learn to put her head underwater.
So it was kind of a trade. Trade of fears being conquered.
Paul stood on the side of the pool, saying things to himself like, it's okay, you won't die, or your friend's dream was just a dream. That convinced him, and he took the plunge. When he surfaced and realized that he was still alive, Paul knew he had been really foolish for the past 10 years. He realizes he should have just gone for it and ignored his fears.
If I had tried to dive all those times, the worst thing that would have happened is I would have belly flopped.
Paul still practices diving, and yeah, he belly flops sometimes. Diving is still scary for him.
And every time he gets on the diving board, he has to talk himself into it. He has to convince himself that it will be okay.
He knows subconsciously that he can do it, and he's getting better at telling himself that his friend at summer camp all those years ago was just crazy after all.
What we're about to hear next also involves water. A whole big lake full of water. Our reporters, Lee Crisso and Livia Luan, bring us the story about a guy named Rob, a rowboat in a big, huge storm.
Rob Hess was bored, But when he saw his two younger cousins in a boat being pushed out to sea by the oncoming storm, his mood began to change.
This was pretty much the highlight of the whole thing for me right there.
Rob and his cousins were spending a week together at Lutheran camp. The cousins were sisters. The oldest one, Karen, was a troublemaker. She frequently got into fights and broke rules.
Hey, that's mine.
No, it's mine.
Give it to me. Now.
So even though her grandmother told her not to, Karen decided it was a good idea to row out to sea with her little sister. But before they knew it, a storm was approaching. Rob was back on land at the campsite, and he could see the storm approaching. So Rob did the first thing that came to mind. He grabbed a boat and went to rescue his cousins.
That was the kind of kid who would do those things. If I saw that something was wrong or something needed doing, I pretty much just dove right in. And I was a pretty confident kid. Like, I pretty much believe I could do anything, you know?
And Rob totally thought he could do it until he was about halfway out.
My grandparents started looking like ants, and you know, I hadn't, like, in my wise 12-year-old brain, I hadn't really calculated that they were still, like, going out farther. So I was actually going to have to go a lot farther than I thought when I first committed to it.
It was then that Rob fully realized what he had gotten himself into. But since he had grown up on a lake, he knew he could do it. And he did. When he reached his cousin Karen, the first thing that she said was,
"Don't you dare tell Grandma that we were scared." You know, she like wanted to play it off like everything was totally cool, which is pretty impossible. She was in tears, you know.
When Rob got back to land, he saw his grandma, and she got all grandmother on him, kissing him and hugging him.
Which is funny to Rob because he didn't think it was that big of a deal, but his grandma did. She still talks about it.
I feel guilty because I'm just like, I don't, you know, I just rode out into a lake, Grams. I don't know, you know, but she's held on to it for a long time, so it means something to her, you know? That's great. I guess I'm a hero.
So it turned out that this brave event was Rob's most courageous moment.
Now, allow me to stick with this water theme for just another minute. Our next story is bigger than a pool, it's bigger than a lake. It involves the ocean. And what happens when a girl named Anna decides to fly over it to get to the other side? As reporters Vicky Lee and Justin Wooten discovered, it takes a little je ne sais quoi to pack up your bags and move to a foreign land.
Anna Solomon wanted adventure. So, 5 years ago, she did what many Americans do. She traveled to Paris.
It was right after college, and I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life, and so I figured I might as well put myself in a situation where I had to figure out just sort of the basic things that I needed to get done, and then I didn't have to worry about the future too much.
At first, Anna had a place to sleep. She stayed with a French family, but she decided pretty quickly that she'd have to find another place to stay.
They got mad at me for taking a glass out of the cupboard, and I said, I don't really want to live here anymore.
The next place she moved to was a bookstore that was owned by a crazy old man named George Whitman. He let her stay there for 2 weeks. While she was there, she received a call. A woman found her a job working with kids with autism. That meant Anna started getting a paycheck.
So with the newfound money, cha-ching, she found an apartment. Now that her life was more stable, she could focus more on learning other things like the language and culture.
There's lots of stereotypes about Paris and about France. Like, people wear berets all the time and walk around with baguettes under their arms. And it's actually all true. All of it is true. Everybody wears berets and walks around with baguettes under their arms. And they all have little dogs and things like that, too. They don't go, ha, ha, ha. That's the only one that's not true. They don't do that. Nobody does that.
Along with the culture, she did learn French.
But it was harder than she thought and way more mortifying.
I'm a writer and I pride myself on being very articulate. And so it was horribly embarrassing when you saw that little smirk on people's faces like, oh, how cute and charming her weird French is, you know?
Bonjour.
That little, like, smile, like, oh, you're doing a good job, you know, like, so patronizing.
After 2 years in France, which was longer than she expected to be there, Anna decided she didn't want to set her life up there. It was never a long-term plan, so she moved back to the United States. Back in the U.S., she noticed that everything she had done in France influenced her outlook on life.
Everything from the books I read to the food that I eat to, you know, the places I volunteer are influenced by the experiences that I had there. So the way that I travel, the way that I look at new cities. So, and I'm much nicer to people. I mean, not like I was mean to people before. I was like, learn English, people. No, I'm much more patient, I think.
Along with the newfound patience, Anna realized something about her own courage.
At the time, I didn't think I was that courageous, but then after I did it and I told people that I did it, people were like, wow, I can't believe that you actually did that. And I realized how kind of stupid it was.
But although Anna claims her trip was slightly foolish, she says she would do it again without hesitation because she liked the adventure.
Our last story is about an adventure that takes place a little closer to home, right here in Michigan. It's about a girl named Sarah who took a giant, courageous leap from the known to the unknown. And as our reporters Bethany Wang and Danny Luan discovered, it might not look as fancy and as daring as running into a burning building, but it could take just as much courage.
After Sarah Hewlett graduated from college, she wasn't sure about what she wanted to do. She thought about grad school, but then she realized she would only be going to grad school because she didn't know what else to do. Life seemed pretty uncertain.
I was depressed for about a year. I lost about 20 pounds. I didn't want to do anything. I didn't want to eat, obviously. That's why I lost the weight. I didn't feel like going out. I just worked and read and stayed home. It was pretty miserable.
At that time, Sarah listened to a lot of radio.
This week on This American Life, when a black man runs for mayor, he should be treated like everyone else, right?
Good evening.
On the next Fresh Air, golf's bad boy, John Daly.
One man, one camera, many, many wars. On the next edition of NPR's On the Media.
She liked the storytelling. She liked writing stories. So she decided to scrap her grad school plans. There was an internship at a public radio station in Detroit that she wanted, but she wasn't guaranteed that internship.
There was just something in me that knew that I was going to get that internship no matter what. You know, it might take some work and some cajoling, but I was going
to
get it.
Before the internship was offered to her, Sarah packed her bags and moved to Detroit. She found an apartment and signed a lease, all without the promise of a job. She was definitely nervous.
I think there's a difference between fearlessness and courage. Because fearlessness, you're not really thinking about the risks that you're taking. But with courage, I think you fear something. You register that fear. You know that you're sort of entering this realm that is scary and unknown. And that's what this was like for me.
Sarah got the internship.
Yay!
But it was a lot of work. And since interns are paid very little, she had to work other jobs to make enough money to live on. After 2 years as an intern, Sarah finally made a career for herself as a reporter, and she loves her job, especially when she thinks of what she could be doing if she wasn't a reporter.
I hate to think that I might have a really boring job. That's really what I wanted to avoid. sitting at a desk, pushing paperwork, not getting to go out and talk to people like I do get to do in the job I do have, not being challenged, not being able to be creative. That's my nightmare of a job.
As a reporter, Sarah found out all kinds of things, and she's met a lot of people she wouldn't get to meet otherwise. With her job now, she gets to report on all things Detroit.
I'm Sarah Hewlett, and there are a few adjectives I hope don't come to mind when you hear my stories on the radio.
Complicated, crazy, confusing, scary, hard.
I cover Detroit for Michigan Radio, and there's no shortage of interesting scenes, characters, and stories here, from the city's schools.
Mi chico san va, camino llega.
To City Hall.
I'm absolutely blown away at this decision.
To a working farm right in the middle of the city.
This your first time doing a ghost Sabbath?
My second.
I can tell. You got that itty bitty little amount of milk.
There are a lot of people who I report about who are just getting by and trying to do the best by their families that they can. And those stories are just as important to our understanding of, you know, this place. My job is to sort of paint this picture of Detroit so that for folks who don't know anything about it, hopefully if they listen to enough of my stories, then they can sort of feel what it is to be in this place.
Sarah's courageous decision to pack up and move to a new city led to a job she really loves. If she hadn't had the courage to move to Detroit and get that first internship, she wouldn't be where she is now.
I'm Sarah Hewlett, Michigan Radio News.
And there you have it. Four stories about
freedom,
fearlessness,
bravery, and of course, courage. This Monster's Life was produced by
Vicky Lee,
Justin Wooten,
Bethany Lee Wang,
Megan Berry,
Olivia Luan,
Leland Anthony Crusoe,
Danny Luan,
Annette Wang,
Henry Brown.
For 826 Michigan, I'm Jennifer Guerra.